to another edition of the John Kirkland Show. Had a little layoff, but I'm back, ready to go. And first of all, before we get into a lot of the things I'm going to touch on, you know, such as the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, boxing, all sorts of stuff for the next hour, just want to get into a few things in terms of last season. One of the things that was crazy last season, because this is the start of the season this Tuesday, one of the things that was interesting to me was like the bubble and how well the NBA was able to protect their players. And the interesting thing about the bubble was you saw teams seem to be more competitive than we thought. So for example, it was like you had Milwaukee as the best team in the East. It seemed like they did not elevate to that because they didn't make the finals. You had the Miami Heat did. And the Miami Heat were not expected to get that far, but they did. Congratulations to the Miami Heat for making the finals. Congratulations to the Los Angeles Lakers, my team. Again, we're world champions and we're looking for title number two this year. One of the interesting things that I found interesting was the question was presented to me about 2 months ago, where I was asked, John, who is, in your opinion, the best team in the East as of right now? For me, I think that in terms of respect, in terms of production, in terms of how they finished, I would have to say Miami Heat. I would have to say Miami Heat. I would have to say that they own right now the number one spot. And I'm not taking anything away from the Nets. I'm not taking anything away from the Philadelphia 76ers. What I'm simply saying is that you have to produce in this league to say, hey, 1 through 8, who's the best in the East? So I know Kevin Durant's there. We all know that you have Kyrie Irving. We understand that. But those two haven't played yet this season. And so this Tuesday night, we're going to find out how well and how good this Nets team is. I assume that they're going to be a very, very good basketball team. Right now, they're number two. But as the season progresses, that will change. Moving forward, the Lakers. Again, congratulations to the Los Angeles Lakers for winning the NBA championship last season in the bubble. It was tough. Congratulations to LeBron James, who brought a championship to LA in a short time. He did it again. One of the things that bothered me the most is that people don't really give LeBron his respect. And I understand from a critic standpoint where LeBron needs help to win championships. Everybody does. Everybody needs help to win championships. Everybody. So the league has changed in such a way where you're looking at the fact that everybody is stacking up. The West, I would say 1 through 8, doesn't matter how you rank them, 1 through 8, the West is tough. Denver, Portland, those two teams by itself, to me, they make Golden State say, hey, you know what? That team over there in Denver ain't messing around. They're not joking. We need to get it together. Same thing in Portland. They were tough. They played Lakers tough last year. So we must not overlook any of those teams. Now, this year, the Lakers added a few people, and arguably they're back. They're going to be going back to the championship. The season starts on Tuesday night. What I'm interested in seeing, as we were able to see tonight, for a short time, we were able to see the Lakers play. And one of the things that stood out to me in tonight's game was Kyle Kuzma. Every time that we talk about the Lakers, we don't talk about Kyle Kuzma. We don't talk about what he can contribute off the bench for the Lakers. He shot well tonight against the Suns. He shot 8 of 15, 23 points. Not bad. And he started tonight. Mark Gasol, 8 points, 6 rebounds. And these are the numbers, smaller numbers, that we're going to need from Mark Gasol. We don't need Mark Gasol to get 20 and 10. You know, we just need him to contribute. That's it. That's it. Some days are going to be better than others. But the Lakers won tonight, 112-107 over the Suns. And I'm just interested in seeing Tuesday night what's going to happen for the Lakers Tuesday night. It's going to be remarkable. Tuesday night, they will take on the Los Angeles Clippers, who I might add, they did beat twice in a row in this preseason. And another thing I want to touch on with this preseason thing is that people always tell me all the time, John, it's just preseason, it's just preseason. But here's the thing, okay? Preseason's important. It's important. Why? Because preseason is letting everyone know, okay, this is what I got going into the season. So, for example, I was just arguing with somebody about James Wiseman. We need to see James Wiseman now because he's the number two pick. He's the number two pick in the draft. We need to see what Wiseman brings to the table for Golden State. And I'm gonna let everybody know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm gonna be super hard on James Wiseman. Why? Because he's only played three college games, and you're telling me that he's the number two pick. You're telling me, with all the big time centers that were in this draft, who put up quite a bit of numbers, and they came from a big time program, such as Kansas, okay? I'm talking about Azubuike. How did he fall so low? I didn't get it. I didn't understand that. So I do get the fact that when you're the number two pick in the draft, the expectations they rise. So for me, I'm looking at it this way. Weissman's only played three games. Just three. He hasn't played any preseason games yet. So at this point, what are we looking at in game one against the Nets? Let me be clear with everybody. Let me just be clear about Brooklyn. Brooklyn has two good centers. James Wiseman is not better than neither one of them. James Wiseman is going to get banged up under the boards. Big time. When you talk about the number two pick, for me, I thought with Golden State in the direction they were going in, I said to myself, don't they want to draft somebody who can win, who they can win with now? Not a developmental player? Because at this point, if it's a developmental player, then you have a wide world of options. And if you have a wide world of options, then is the number two pick drafting Weissman now, as opposed to saying, okay, well, let me go ahead and trade the number two pick, or at least put it on block, see what it's worth, okay, and maybe get somebody else next year since we've already lost Klay Thompson. Because now you could be a really good basketball team with a top 14 pick. Just my opinion. But we're going to find out Tuesday night what James Wiseman is all about and see the contribution that he makes to Golden State. I also want to say this real quick while it's on my mind. Shout out to LaMelo Ball. Homeboy is balling right now. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I hope people realize that. And I want people to understand this too, is that LaMelo Ball is already pro ready. He's been playing internationally for some time now. So he was one of the most seasoned picks in this draft. So to me, I thought, okay, well, maybe the Timberwolves would take him at one. I thought maybe he could have been the number one pick in the draft. But they took Anthony Edwards. And I will say this, and I will say this, and I'm not saying Anthony Edwards is a trash player, because he's not. To be number one, you have to be a really good player, or for someone to deem that you are a top player. For me, I thought LaMelo should have been number one, and Anthony Edwards should have been number three. Why? Because the contribution that LaMelo Ball can give to the Timberwolves, you can't get that from Anthony Edwards. It's going to take him some time. And the question that I have for all my listeners is this: James Wiseman, Edwards, does their games translate to the NBA? Because see, that's where we're at. Because they're playing against the best players that arguably the NBA has to offer. So with that being said, how is their games going to adjust to that? And I see right now, my pick right now for Rookie of the Year is LaMelo Ball. And I'm you heard it first. I'm calling it right now. Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year. Just saying. So Tuesday night, ladies and gentlemen, Tuesday night, make sure you tune in, because you're going to get a fantastic night of basketball. You're going to end up seeing the Lakers take on the Clippers and Golden State taking on the Nets. And at this point, I'm looking forward to the NBA season to start, because I want to see what the hype is with Golden State. I want to see what the hype is with the number two pick. I want to see what the hype is with the Brooklyn Nets. I want to see it. Maybe I'm wrong about a few things, or maybe I'm wrong about some things, but we will soon find out. Now, if you look at the way the Lakers played tonight, they put up 112 points on 47% shooting tonight. Not bad shooting, and I'm talking about as a whole. Not bad at all. I think that the Lakers, if they could do this every single night, because what happens is the Lakers, if they can average over 100 points a game as a whole, they're going to be a team to beat. Maybe anywhere between 112, 120, they're going to be a hard team to beat. Tonight, the Suns shot 40%. Shot 40% tonight. And I'll give you some stats here. Anthony Davis played only 18 minutes. He shot 3 of 4. Went 4 of 6 from the free throw line. 4 rebounds, 10 points. Kyle Kuzma, 32 points, 8 of 15. 4 of 8 from the 3-point line. He had 3 rebounds, 23 points. LeBron James played 15 minutes. Went 4 of 10, 40, he shot 40% from the floor. He missed every three-pointer he had, went 0 of 2 for 11 points. Mark Gasol played 21 minutes tonight. He had 8 rebounds in 21 minutes. To me, that's good production. Morris had 16 minutes tonight, 3 points. Montrezl Harrell, had 22 minutes, 5 of 8, 6 rebounds, 11 points tonight. I've said this for a while with Montrezl Harrell. I like Montrezl Harrell. I like his game. And I think what he's going to bring to LA is going to be fascinating off the bench. It's just the firepower that we're going to need. And another thing, he reminds me a lot of Draymond Green. A lot of Draymond Green. Shout out to Draymond Green. He plays just like Draymond Green. in terms of aggressiveness, in terms of rebounding, all that stuff. Defensively, I think we got a steal there. Also, we got Wesley Matthews, who we acquired in free agency. He played 23 minutes tonight, 7 points. And Horton Tucker played 24 minutes, 7 of 11. He had 18 points tonight. Huge game tonight for Horton Tucker. So he might make the roster this year. So we may have him on the floor. The Suns tonight. Crowder played 21 minutes tonight. Bridges played 27 minutes tonight. Ayton played 25. Paul played 24. And Booker played 25. And Ayton had 21 points tonight, 9 rebounds. Bridges had 10 points tonight, 3 rebounds. And Devin Booker tonight had 16 points, 7 assists. I think with the Suns, I think they're building something special down in Phoenix. I like what they've been able to do. I like some of the moves they made. They're a very young team. They have a veteran point guard in Chris Paul. And I think that it's going to be an interesting season for the Suns. And potentially, there's several teams right now that I think potentially could make the eighth seed in the West because the West is stacked. And I could see some fluctuation in terms of, maybe a flip-flop between the seventh seed, eighth seed. It may be premature now to say that, but I think that for sure the Suns have a great opportunity to be in the playoffs this year. Now, we're going to move forward, and I want to get into the NFL. And this is, it's just mind-boggling how a lot of teams really improved over the course span of just one season. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys, just because that's my football team. Right now, we suck. Okay, that's just the bottom line. We're a horrible football team. And I think that the season didn't pan out the way that we thought it would. We lost, unfortunately, we lost Prescott. And, things just kind of took a turn for the worse at that point. Ezekiel Elliott only had a 100-yard rushing game once. The offensive line is horrible. Our defense is horrible. I think there's a lot of improvement going into next year. The entire division is horrible. The entire division is horrible in the NFC East. So I don't feel all that bad. Now, let's start with the AFC East. The Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, they've lost one home game this year. They've won 6 out of their last 7 home games this year. That's not bad. So if you're a team right now and you got to head to Buffalo and you got to play those Bills on the road, that's going to be a tough ball game for you because this is a hungry team that's won 6 out of their last 7. And let me tell you about improvement in 1 year. The Miami Dolphins have been a horrible team for as long as I can remember. They have a combined, well, they have a total record of 8-5, and their road victories are impressive. Their road victories are impressive. They've won their last 4 out of their last 6 road games this year. Impressive. The New York Jets are a horrible, horrible, horrible football team. And they've been horrible for some time. But I was talking to a couple of my friends today, and one of the questions was, do you think Sam Darnold is the man in New York? Is he the guy? Is he the quarterback there for the Jets? I said, yes, because they drafted him high for a reason. However, you got Trevor Lawrence. So if Sam Darnold's not your guy, Which way do you move? Which way do you actually move? I'm gonna tell you which way we move. I think at this point, at the end of the season, if you want, and I mean, they're gonna get the number one pick. There's no doubt about it. They're gonna get the number one pick. For me, if I am the Jets, and you evaluate the roster, for me, I'm saying, okay, I'm taking Sam Darnold, and I'm gonna put him on the block, and I'm gonna see what I can get for him. I think Sam Darnold is worth a second round pick. He's worth a second round pick right now. You trade him to whoever wants to give you a second round pick. At that point, now you have a couple of assets now. Now you have 2 second round picks for this season, plus you have the number one overall pick. So now you have three good picks at your disposal now. You can address some of these needs. No matter which way the Jets move, they're gonna be young. And whatever talent that they put on the field, it has to show. Adam Gase needs to be fired. He needs to be fired. There's no way you could be 0-13. They have not won a road game. They have not won a home game in all of the 13 games, and he still keeps his job when you have other coaches with a decent football team, with a decent record, and they're getting fired. So you're telling me Matt Patricia, maybe not Matt Patricia. Yeah, Matt Patricia. So you're telling me his team won 4 games on the road this year, but the Jets win nothing, and Adam Gase still has his job. You tell me there's something wrong with that picture. Something's wrong. There's a lot of denial in New York. They need to figure that out. They need to figure out what's going on in New York. The AFC North, Pittsburgh Steelers, out of 13 games, they won 11. They are 4-0 in the division, 8-1 in the conference, meaning they've only lost one conference game in the last 9 games. That's a bad football team over there. That's a bad football team, but they've lost their last 2. That's a bad football team over there. The Cleveland Browns, overnight success. And as I mentioned earlier about the Miami Dolphins, these teams were rebuilding teams. These were not like Super Bowl contending teams at one particular time. So I like the direction that the Miami Dolphins are going in, and I like the direction that the Cleveland Browns are going in. Here's a funny stat. Cleveland Browns are tough at home, believe it or not. Out of 7 games, they've won their last 5. They have a combined record of 9-4. They're 9-4, and they are in playoff contention. Baltimore Ravens, they're 8-5. They've won 5 out of their last 7 on the road. So Baltimore is actually a pretty good road team. They're not good at home, but they're good on the road. And with their record, it's going to matter because they're probably going to have to go on the road and play. So I think Baltimore is going to be okay. The AFC South, this doesn't surprise me. The Tennessee Titans, they're 9-4. Here's a funny stat about the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans have won their last 5 they've won their last 5 road games out of 6. So out of 6 road games, they've won their last 5. That's a tough football team down there in Nashville. The Indianapolis Colts. And shout out to the Colts. The Colts were the Pitts. And they added Rivers, and they added a couple of key pieces. And if you look at it, they've won their last 5 out of their last 7 road games, and they have a combined record of 9-4. Not bad. So when you talk about the Colts, when you talk about Cleveland Browns, you talk about the Miami Dolphins, these are teams that at just this time last year, they were looking for the top player to help them get over the hump, get into the playoffs. I'm going to tell you this. In the beginning of the season, there were no conversations about the Miami Dolphins making the playoffs, Cleveland Browns making the playoffs, or even Indianapolis Colts. Interesting. The Kansas City Chiefs has not lost a road game this season. They're 7-0 on the road. They're the best road team in football, period. The Kansas City Chiefs have won 5 out of their last 6 home games, 12-1, and they're 10-1 in the conference. The Raiders. The Raiders look like they're done. They're 7-6. It's always a possibility, but I mean, they would have to win out. However, the Raiders are pretty good on the road. They've won their last 5 out of their last 7 games on the road. Not bad, but not good enough. The Raiders have some work to do between now and next season. The Washington football team in the NFC East. They're 6-7. If Washington loses and Dallas Cowboys potentially win out, they can make the playoffs. The Green Bay Packers have qualified for the playoffs in the NFC North. They're 10-3. Funny stat for the Packers, they've won 5 out of their last 6 home games. So they're tough at home. It's hard to go down into Lambeau and trying to win. Very difficult with a 5-1 record. I just want to add that. New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints are 10-3. They're 5-0 in the division, but they've won 5 out of their last 6 home games. And then you're looking at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is 8-5. Tampa Bay has won their last 4 out of their last 6 road games. And if you look at the NFC West, it looks like the 49ers are done. The Arizona Cardinals are on the ropes, and it looks like the Rams are in a tie right now with the Seattle Seahawks, 9-4. Both teams are 9-4. The Seahawks have won 6 out of their last 7, and the Rams have won 5 out of their last 6, both home games. So both teams are tough at home. Both teams are tough at home. If you look at the playoff picture right now, and I'm going to get off into that, is that right now, the Houston Texans, the Chargers, Bengals, Jaguars, and Jets are all eliminated. Same thing with Atlanta. Atlanta is officially eliminated in the NFC as well. So right now, if you think about it, right now, you have the top 2 teams, the number 1 seed, Kansas City Chiefs, the number 2 seed, Pittsburgh Steelers, the number 3 seed is Buffalo, 4 seed is Tennessee, 5 seed is the Browns, 6 seed is the Colts, 7 seed is the Dolphins, the 8 seed is the Ravens. So you're looking at the Las Vegas Raiders are on the bubble. If Baltimore loses with the Raiders win, that might create some controversy for the 8th seed, meaning that the Raiders would have to hope that the Ravens lose, and the Raiders need some big wins down the stretch here to even qualify. So the Raiders have a tough task here. And then you're looking at in the NFC, Green Bay Packers, they obviously are going to be the number 1 seed. New Orleans is the number 2 seed. The Rams are 3. They're not the Washington Redskins. They're the Washington football team. I got to get used to that. The Washington football team would be a 4 seed. Seattle's a 5 seed. Tampa Bay's a 6 seed. Arizona's a 7 seed. And Minnesota is an 8 seed. But I think all these things will change due to the wild card situation, or if teams win, lose, however those things work out. Statistically, I wanted to bring some statistics in. Now, when you talk about the offensive leaders, when you talk about the top 5 quarterbacks in the league right now, I want people to understand that you got a lot of quarterbacks that are making $100 million and they're not even a top 5 quarterback in this league. Maybe not even top 10, but let's just start with top 5. if you got Patrick Mahomes, he's number one. Number two, Deshaun Watson. Number three, Aaron Rodgers, of course, Russell Wilson, and Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is a top five quarterback in this league, believe it or not. The top rushers this year: Derrick Henry, Delvin Cook, James Robinson. He rushed for 1035 this season, and he's the third leading rusher in this league. Ronald Jones, 900 yards, he's fourth, and Nick Chubb, 881, is number five. Now, when you talk about Ronald Jones is about 100 yards away from rushing for 1,000 yards, and the Nick Chubb is about 100 and some odd, maybe 150, 60, whatever it is, yards away from also breaking that 1,000-yard mark, which I think Nick Chubb will do that. The top receivers in this league right now, you have Travis Kelce. He went 1,250 in yards. The number two guy, believe it or not, and shout out to DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf went 1,180 this season. Stephon Diggs had 1167 this year. Tyreek Hill had 1158. And DeAndre Hopkins went 1155, which I'm not surprised because he's one of the best receivers in this league. Incredible stat. Also, the top tacklers this year, Zach Cunningham had 127 in tackles this year. Jalen Smith of the Dallas Cowboys had 123. Raekwon Smith of the Bears, 122. Blake Martinez, the former Packer, had 118. And Devin White from Tampa Bay, also with 118. And also, when you talk about sacks, and the thing is that sacks is a little bit different because people never give credit for the sack leaders. And then now you're talking about considerably, arguably all pros. And this is who I'm going to name right now. Number one at 12 and a half sacks, Aaron Donald, the Rams. Now, no one's going to be surprised. I'm not. The best defensive tackle in this game right now. He was last year too. So Aaron Donald is the best in the game right now. Are we surprised that he has 12 and a half sacks? No. T.J. Watt of Pittsburgh, he has 12 sacks this year. He has 12 sacks for the season, 12.0. Za'Darius Smith of Green Bay, 10 and a half sacks this year. Trey Hendrickson of New Orleans, 10 and a half sacks. And of course, last but not least, Myles Garrett, 10 and a half sacks this year. With all those stat lines that I just gave, you got to wonder, all this big money that they're making, this is production. Jalen Smith got a big contract from the Dallas Cowboys, and he had 123 tackles this year. Now, DeMarcus Lawrence got some big money from Dallas, and he's not even in the top five. Something's wrong with that. I think he has, what, maybe two sacks on the year, if that. Yeah, we got to get it. Got to get it together for sure. Now, offensive leaders. Let's talk about as a team, the team stats. And right now, the number one offensive team in the league right now is the Kansas City Chiefs. Number two is the Green Bay Packers. Three is the Titans. Arizona Cardinals is four, and the Rams are five. Yards allowed. The Rams, 285. They're number one. New Orleans, Pittsburgh, and Washington. And the 49ers are the fifth team in the league. The 49ers only give up 316 yards a game. And they're the number five team defensively. That's not bad. Not bad for a 5-8? 5-18, 5-19, not bad at all. The Washington football team gives up 313 and a half. Not bad at all. The top rushing team in this league, just for everyone to know, the Baltimore Ravens are the top rushing team in the league. And turnover difference, the Pittsburgh Steelers have 11. So that kind of show, and I'm saying these stats, ladies and gentlemen, because I want all my listeners to understand that just because you're 10-5, it doesn't make you a great football team. It doesn't make you a good football team. You got the Washington football team. They're a top four team in the league that gives up less yards than probably a 10-5 football team who's qualified for the playoffs already. That lets you know something. Now, moving on. Let's talk about boxing. I want to get this out the way. I got to get this out the way. It's a huge topic to talk about, and I just want to get this, I just want to get this over with, because a lot of people, you know, always want to talk about, you know, boxing, and they get my opinion on it and so on and so forth. But what I really want to do is I want to talk about 147. I want to start off with that division first, because it's just a lot of talk going on right now. I saw Errol Spence and Garcia fight. I was at home, I saw it. Here's my take on it. I want to give credit to Danny Garcia. I thought Danny Garcia fought the best he could, and he lost to a world-class champion. In my eyes, there's nothing to be ashamed of. He lost to a great champion. And shout out to Errol Spence, because I was one of those critics that said, hey, how's this guy gonna be when, after that accident, after that brutal accident that he had that could have cost him his life, or God knows what would have happened. When I saw Errol Spence in that fight, that was a different Errol Spence. I haven't seen that Errol Spence before. That's a different Errol Spence to me. He seems leaner, stronger. The punches seem crisp, powerful. There was a lot of good things I saw with Errol Spence, but a lot of people were dogging Danny Garcia. And he has nothing to be ashamed of, man. He's done a lot in the sport. He just lost to the better man that night, and right now, arguably, the best at 147. And you have to give him the best at 147. A lot of people say pound for pound is Bud Crawford. And as much as I want to agree with people, my question is, to those who may disagree with me, if they're listening to this, is how is Bud Crawford the best pound for pound fighter at 147? I'm just talking about 147. I'm not saying overall, I'm saying 147. How are you the best fighter at 147 when Errol Spence has all the belts? So how are you pound for pound better than Errol Spence, but Errol Spence has all the belts? He unified. He's the unified champion at 147. So to me, I just feel like that's kind of disrespectful, in my opinion, to say that. Now, no disrespect to Bud Crawford, because we understand what this man can do. You know, he unified at two different weight classes. So there's no, I'm not trying to sit up here and dog him out, because he's a bad boy. And in fact, nobody really wants to fight him anyway, to be honest with you, because that's a bad man. But yeah, I mean, Manny Pacquiao, what people got to understand is, I was listening to Keith Thurman. And Keith Thurman doesn't understand that you overlooked Manny Pacquiao. And he beat you. He beat you just the way I thought. I was on my podcast for 2 months. I said, Keith Thurman is going to lose to Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao has 2 decades of experience. He's fought a lot of fighters. He's fought in almost every division up until 147. So it's crazy how you overlook Manny. People say, oh man, he's in his late 40s. He's over the hill. No, he's not. Because he looked like he was 20, 21 years old when he fought Keith Thurman. And that's why Keith Thurman lost. Now Keith Thurman said, oh, I had all these injuries and stuff like that. I didn't want to give out no excuses. I fought the fight through. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And we didn't know about the injuries till after. But yeah, so I give him credit. I give him credit for that for sure. But he's saying that he would be willing to fight Terrence Crawford at 147. Just send over the contract and so on and so forth. And I just want to say this about business, right? If it was that simple, a lot of fights would have been made. A lot of fights would have been made. So I don't really buy into the hype anymore. I don't really listen to the hype anymore. Just because if a fight is going to get made, it's going to get made. It's going to get made. Simple as that. So if people like to buy into the hoopla and the rumors and all of that, I'm all about let's see what happens. You know, alert me when something is signed, sealed, and delivered. Sean Porter, do I think Sean Porter is ready for a Errol Spence? Why not? I mean, look at his last performance against Errol. To me, I had that fight a draw. I had that fight a draw to me, my opinion. I don't know what everybody else's scorecards were. I actually attended that fight. I was actually there, and in my opinion, it was a very close fight. Very close fight, but I had it a draw, to be honest. But, you know, again, that's my opinion. I will say this in the rankings right now at 147. Here's my opinion. The number one guy, Errol Spence, of course. The number two guy, Terrence Crawford. And the number three guy is Manny Pacquiao. I believe that at 147, those are the fights to be made. If you're not fighting any one of those three that I just named, I don't think anybody wants to hear it. Any of the fight fans that are listening to this podcast, I'm pretty sure they would agree. If you're not fighting any one of those three, I don't think people really care at this point. Now, let's go back down to... I want to talk about the lightweight division also at 135. Right now, the best lightweight in the world is Teofimo Lopez. Right now. And you have to give him that, like it or not. You got to give it to him because he unified. He got all the belts right now. Now, I've heard Devin Haney say, hey, he wants to make that fight because he's the man with all the gold. Do I think Devin Haney is ready for Teofimo Lopez? No, I don't. I agree with Bob Arum. I do believe that Devin Haney needs to fight more opponents. He needs to fight more top contenders before that fight is even made. Right now, because he unified, Teofimo Lopez is a household name, for sure. Is Devin Haney a household name? No. But I will say this. Devin Haney is up and coming, and Devin Haney will be a pay-per-view star. I can already see it. He's a bad boy. He stopped a lot of people. Him and Ryan Garcia. Do I think Ryan Garcia is ready for Teofimo Lopez? No, I don't. And I'm not dogging those young men. I'm not. Let me be clear. I'm not dogging those young men. But what I'm simply saying is that I think experience plays a major key. And I said the same thing when the Loma fight and the Teofimo Lopez. I thought Loma was gonna prove that, hey, he's the more experienced fighter. He's the better fighter. And he proved everything but that. So I'm going to give Teofimo Lopez his shine. He earned it. I'm going to respect it. And we're just going to see what happens down the line. I'm pretty sure he's got some mandatories that he's going to have to face. And, we're just going to have to see. I do believe that Devin Haney is going to have to prove himself. Devin Haney is a hell of a fighter. Hell of a fighter. And he's the WBC lightweight champion. And I do hear people say, oh, he's a paper champion. Arguably, you could say that because who did he beat to get the championship? He was an intern. Is that Devin Haney's fault? No. But I think he needs to fight a solid two opponents before we could have this conversation with maybe a Gervonta Davis or whatever. Gervonta Davis. Let's talk about Gervonta Tank Davis. Gervonta is, to me, he's the number two lightweight in the world. He's the number two lightweight in the world right now. And here's why. He has the WBA regular lightweight championship at 135, and he has the WBA junior lightweight championship at 130. So he has two belts in two different weight classes, but there will be some mandatories for both of those belts at some point. Gervonta Davis knocked out Leo Santa Cruz, and I will say this. Leo Santa Cruz, that was a good fight. That was a good fight. But I think that Gervonta Davis was able to knock him out and prove that he's the best right now between 135 and 130. And arguably, I would love to see a unification fight between Gervonta Davis and Teofimo Lopez. That would be for everything. For all, I mean, that makes business sense going into 2021. And I believe somewhere down the road, if Gervonta Davis don't move up from 135, I do believe that fight will happen. Let's move forward. I know I'm not going to be able to get to all the divisions and talk about all the divisions, but I want to just talk about, in closing, the heavyweight division. Let's talk about that. Shout out to Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua looked incredible over the weekend in knocking out Pulev, and he looked great. He looked leaner. His shots seemed powerful. He seems a lot more focused. I was very impressed with Anthony Joshua, but I really don't like Eddie Hearn. And I feel like this. No disrespect to Eddie Hearn. I think Eddie Hearn has done a good job with some of these fighters. But here's my point. You know Tyson Fury has a contract obligation with Deontay Wilder. Now, when Deontay Wilder was world champ and Tyson Fury was on his last leg, Deontay Wilder gave him an opportunity. Deontay Wilder didn't say, hey, you got to go out and fight these guys before you fight me. Now when it's time to get the rematch, now you don't want to give the rematch to him. So now you're saying, okay, well, right now, since Anthony Joshua just beat Pulev, we're going to go and make the Anthony Joshua and the Tyson Fury fight. I think that if that fight goes through, I think that it's very disrespectful to Deontay Wilder and his team, and that lets you know that... you know, this is the way business works in the sport of boxing. And it's no disrespect to Anthony Joshua. And I understand business is business. But you know what? Being a fighting champion, and let me be clear. I'm not saying Anthony Joshua is scared, because I don't think so. What I'm saying is this. If you're a fighting champion, honor your word. Just honor your word. If you said, if the contract states that you are supposed to fight Tyson Fury one more time, or Tyson Fury is supposed to fight you one more time, honor your contract. When that fight between between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder gave that man another shot. Deontay Wilder didn't have to. But Deontay Wilder is a fighting champion. He gave a lot of people an opportunity, not just Tyson Fury. And I think it's just jacked up. That's just all I have to say about Tyson Fury. But again, congratulations to Anthony and Joshua. Man, you were incredible. It was a very, very good fight. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, do not forget whatever it is that you do. Friday night will be Triple G. Tune into the Zone. He's going to make his return to the ring Friday night on the Zone. If you don't have the app, I believe it'll be on pay-per-view. Whatever your service provider has, or go ahead and download the app for DAZN. Also, don't miss out on Canelo Alvarez. He returns to the ring against Colin Smith, and they will go to war at 168 pounds. So you got Caleb Plant, the IBF champion. That fight could be made somewhere down the road. Billy Joe Saunders, hopefully we could see that fight at some point. And then you also have Canelo as the WBA regular super middleweight champion. And then Canelo Alvarez is also the middleweight champion at 160. He also has the WBA 160 pound title. So again, right now Canelo Alvarez has options, and hopefully we get to see what those options are, you know, after he fights Colin Smith on Saturday night. And I know the big topic is going to be Triple G. And does it make business sense for Canelo to fight Triple G? I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think it makes business sense. I think they fought already. I think we know the end result. And I think that Canelo Alvarez has proven himself in the sport. He can dictate who he wants to fight. And I think now it's a business for Canelo. It's not about who deserves it. It's about, okay, well, do you got a belt? What do you have to bring to the table? And I think that people want to see Billy Joe Saunders, maybe a Caleb Plant. You know, maybe fight Demetrius Andre, maybe fight Jermall Charlo. You know, I think Jermall Charlo and Canelo Alvarez will be a hell of a fight. I mean, I think that's a money fight right there. So a lot of politics go into this, and I hope that in 2021 we see some major fights. But tune in to DAZN. It's a big weekend for DAZN. They have Triple G fighting on Friday, and they have Canelo Alvarez, pound for pound, the best fighter in the world. Whether you guys want to agree with me or not, the best fighter in the world. And I'm going to tell you why he's the best fighter in the world. Why? For this reason. Name one fighter besides Roy Jones who fought at 147, 154, won a title at 154, won a title at 160, won a title at 168, and then turned around and won a title at 175 pounds at the light heavyweight division. Don't worry, I'll wait. Right now, Canelo Alvarez is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Period. Got to put some respect on it. And I know there's boxing fans out there that's going to disagree with me and say, hey, what is this guy talking about? He doesn't really know what he's talking about. But unfortunately, I do. And I call it the way I see it. And if it wasn't for Canelo Alvarez fighting Floyd Mayweather when they fought, Canelo Alvarez would still be undefeated. He'd still be undefeated. So it's all about what makes business sense. And I think right now, if none of those fights could be made, I think that maybe he would consider Gennady Golovkin again. Again. I want to thank everyone who took the time out to listen to my show, The John Kirkland Show, and it will be on every platform, every Thursday morning. Tune in, check it out. We're going to cover almost everything in sports. I appreciate everybody. Have a safe, safe Thursday. Have a lovely morning. And thank you for taking the time out to listen to The John Kirkland Show this morning. We'll see you next week. Same time, same channel.